And welcome to Keg and Valve Maintenance and Repair Standards. My name is Matt Stinchfield. I'm founder of Plowshare Brewing Company in Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm also privileged to be the chair of the BA Safety Subcommittee since it was created about a year and a half ago. And I was recently appointed the Safety Ambassador for the BA. And as the Safety Ambassador, I'll be traveling from state-to-state guild meetings to promote achievable and affordable safety practices for breweries of all sizes. The BA actively promotes safety for its member brewers through the work of the Safety Subcommittee, through CBC presentations like this one, through Power Hour teleconferences, and through written best management practices and guidances. Before I introduce our esteemed speaker, I'd like to have just a couple of quick housekeeping points. And we know how important housekeeping is to safety. First, I'd like to ask that you hold your questions to the end. We'll reserve plenty of time for your questions. And when you have a question, please step up to the microphone so the question can be recorded and added into the record of this talk. After the talk, while everything is fresh in your mind, we ask that you take a very short survey. We'll take you just less than a couple of minutes. Access the CBC app and then go to this talk, and then at the bottom, select Take the Survey. And that would be very helpful for future planning. We appreciate it. We also want you to know, lastly, that at 4 o'clock today, the Safety Subcommittee and three other subcommittees of the BA's Technical Committee will be welcoming you to open houses, or happy hours, if you will, in rooms D137 for safety and nearby rooms for the other subcommittees. Please come mingle, have a beer with us, and ask some candid questions to members of the Safety Subcommittee. Our presenter today, speaking on the always timely and potentially life-saving topic of keg and valve maintenance, is Mr. Mark Carpenter, Sales Director for all of North America for Franke Beverage Systems, based in Kreuzl, Germany. Mark began working for Franke Beverage Systems in January of 2009, and one of his first tasks at Franke was to develop keg service and repair capabilities, which allowed him to see every conceivable keg failure mode and their respective results. In addition, as part of Franke's Global Network Keg Services, Mark regularly meets with other Global Network Keg Service members from the UK, Germany, Czech Republic, and Poland to discuss keg repair techniques, failure modes, handling methods, and logistics. So won't you please give a warm round of applause and help me welcome Mark Carpenter.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming. As a keg manufacturer, you know, keg and valve maintenance and repair is something that is very important to us, and it's also part of your supply chain. So I'm glad to see so many people here taking it seriously. Let's see if I can work this thing. All right. I want to walk through a couple of things. There are several benefits to maintaining your keg float. All right, but the first one is there are safety risks for your employees and for your consumers out there that are related to kegs just because it's a pressure vessel. So if you don't know how to properly care for a keg and a valve, there's a substantial liability there for you guys legally. So anytime you're doing any of this keg and safety valve repair, you need to make sure you know what you're doing or you're sending it to someone who's trained. All right, but in addition to the legal liabilities, it extends the life of your existing float. It makes it a more profitable package. It ensures that your keg is fit for fill every time it goes out into the field. It eliminates costly returns for defective kegs, and it reduces the risk of off-taste product from other forms of contamination. All right. Kegs and valves, again, should always be repaired to their original dimensional specifications by a qualified technician. And we'll see later on, this is especially true of the valves. All right. If the kegs repairs are not performed by untrained staff without the specially designed tools, again, there's a significant safety risk, which also leads to legal liabilities. All right. You'll see throughout the presentation, there are going to be different areas where some of the text is in red. That means there's usually that is a potential safety hazard. A lot of these damages or failure modes, especially with the keg, don't really pose a risk to anyone, but some of them do. So, one of the damp failure modes is there's bent or damaged necks, dents in the kegs, which can impacts the volume of the keg. Holes, obviously, frozen expanded vessels, beer stones, well damaged, but the main one that's a hazard is a bent or damaged chime. The chime's designed to do a couple of things. Let me see if I've got it on this next. Right. The chime's designed to do a couple of things. It protects the valve and the neck, but also it keeps the keg from tipping over. And with the full keg, an unstable keg can be a hazard. All right. Valve failure modes. Now, this is the most common failures come from the valve, from what we've seen in our keg repair facilities. All right, and the most common is the damaged CO2 valve. CO2 valves typically have a lifespan of 5 to 7 years, depending on all your cleaning methods and its exposure to the sun and things like that. But there are also bent lugs, a damaged body, loss of tension in the springs. Scratched ball can lead to depressurization, and then organic or inorganic contamination. But there's also a lock ring. There's a couple of safety features on a valve, and if the lock ring being the primary one, and if a lock ring is not properly installed, that can lead to injection of the valve. And once or twice a year, we hear of someone who got hurt by a valve that shot out of a keg, and there's almost always a damaged lock ring or someone doing something that they're not trained for behind one of those injuries. All right. Keg repair specifications. Again, bent chimes can make the keg unstable. It's not really rocket science when it gets to this. All you need to do to repair a chime is make it stable so that the keg doesn't tip over. Same thing with the bent or deformed neck. Now, most of you may have a small brewery where you've got a manual filling line, but if you've got an automated filling line, the top of the neck and the top of the chime, that space is supposed to be 0.33 inches. All right, and every racking line in the U.S. that's automated is set up to that standard. So if your neck is off a little bit, or if it's down or been banged in a little bit, that can create problems on an automated filling line. And again, dents or body damaged. You want to remove those so that your keg can hold the stated capacity. And again, the dent removal process, if you don't know what you're doing, you don't want to do this. There are only a couple of companies in the U.S. or really in the world that have this capability, and it's not something, don't try this at home, kids. Pinholes. Pinholes come from a number of different causes, but it's usually poor welding techniques, and you get a little hole in there, a little air pocket, and a couple things can happen. One of the things that can happen is that you can get some acid in there from your cleaning process or caustic, and it'll get stuck in that hole, and it'll stay in there, and it'll continue to eat through that weld in that hole. The other thing is you can get bacteria in that hole, and your cleaning chemicals won't clean the keg, and that'll infect your keg and could potentially infect your brewery. Another one, repair the thing that we see a lot, or another failure mode that we see a lot, are frozen kegs. And they're not always as easy to see is in this picture. I don't know if you can tell, especially that bottom picture. The bottom dome is just completely expanded. In the top picture, it's harder to see as well, but the keg, it's leaning over. It won't sit on the chime because the top and bottom are so frozen or so expanded. But it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes they can expand just a little bit, and your neck will be off or something will be off, or you'll hold too much volume. And sometimes it's a little bit hard to tell, but that's something we see a lot of that people, for the most part, aren't aware of. That's one of the ones we get asked about the most. All right, beer stone. This one's obvious. So from a keg repair standard, anytime you've got a new keg or you're sending a keg to be repaired somewhere, the inside's got to be clean to the metal. Every surface has to be perfectly smooth. All right, and that also applies to for weld repair. So when you weld a keg, if you're repairing a weld, say a hole on the center weld, you need to make sure that whoever's doing that for you is completely cleaning and smoothing out the inside of that keg so you don't get any bacteria in it. All right, there are two main valve suppliers in North America, and here are their two valve designs. And you can take a look at these later. You can get a closer look, but they all work with the same coupler, so the functional parts are the same. Valve repair specifications. The removal and installation process of the valve, because the keg is a pressure vessel, that's the most dangerous task you can perform on a keg. And really, if you don't know what you're doing, don't try it. I sometimes worry that when we try to educate people on this stuff, they may go away thinking that, all right, I know how this works now. I know what to look for. I can do this myself. I would say in very few cases, do you want to be messing with the keg valve by yourself? Anyone who does this, you have to have the right tools. You've got to have the right training. And before you start, you know, I think the most common mistake is people don't release the pressure in the valve before they start to remove that lock ring, and it's easy to do. It's, you don't think of it if you're not trained to think of it. But another thing to be aware of is anytime you replace a valve or you remove a valve and reinstall it, the lock ring, which again is the primary safety feature in a keg, you always want to use a brand new lock ring. You never want to use a damaged lock ring, and I'll show you that later. Also, the same thing with O-rings. You want to use a brand new O-ring. This isn't really a safety risk, but the O-ring is what keeps the neck pressurized, or what seals the neck and keeps the pressure in. And after a very short time of being in a keg, a lock ring will lose its shape, or it'll attain the shape of wherever it is, the neck that it's in. And when you put a new valve in, or when you replace a valve, you want to make sure you've got a brand new one, so it'll take on the new shape of however that neck is in there, or that valve is in there. All right. Again, CO2 valves. There's a lot of different damage forms you can see on here, but CO2 valve, again, is the most common one. They can just age. They'll crack. That'll create leaks. They can get cuts or gouges on the surface. Sometimes, you know, especially after like 5 or 10 years of going through all these caustic and sanitary cycles, and, you know, with steam and extreme heat and then extreme cold, they can start to bubble. The rubber can come off. So I would say this is, for valve repairs, for percentage, that's probably 70% of what you see. If you've got a problem, your keg's not holding pressure, I'd say you probably need to replace the CO2 valve. But what you'll also see sometimes is spring replacement, and this is really rare, but usually sometimes you'll get a spring that won't retain its tension, and so it can't, you know, the way the valves are designed, there's a spring to present upward pressure and a spring to apply downward pressure, and if those aren't right, that your keg will not hold pressure. All right, and another form of repair is bent lugs. Now you can see that one there that's on the inside. So that valve, obviously, you're not gonna be able to put a coupler on that valve because that lug is bent down. But if you see on the bottom there, on the bottom of that top picture, there's also what we call an ear. And that's what slips into the neck, and it holds that in place. If that's not right, you won't be able to get your neck in there, or you won't be able to put a lock ring in properly. All right. Also, if the ball gets scratched, most of the valves in North America are now ball valves. They used to have a valve called a poppet valve. It's pretty rare to see now. So most of them are ball valves, but those balls can get scratched, and that can create a leak, an air leak in your keg. All right. So the real reason I'm up here is because there was an incident this year with a distributor. A distributor on a route was delivering a keg. He was pulling it out of his truck. He pulled a full keg down. It hit the ground, and once it hit the ground, that pressure jarred it enough that the valve shot out and hit the guy in the mouth. The guy was—he must have been a pretty remarkable guy, because after getting shot in hit in the mouth with a valve, he had the wherewithal to get the valve and the lock ring and the O-ring before going to the hospital for stitches, which is pretty impressive in my book. So the brewer in question is one of our customers. They gave us a call. We went up to the distributor to take a look at the keg, and it was an old keg. It was made by a manufacturer that's no longer in business. It was probably 15 years old, maybe 20 years old. What came out of it is the rest of this document that you're going to see now. The customer in question asked us to put this together so that they could send it to their field guys, their distributors, and employees, so that they can be aware of what to look for on a keg when a lock ring is damaged. So how do they figure out when one of these kegs may be out there? And so that's how this document came about. This keg in question showed evidence of tampering. There's no way to really prove anything, how it happened. My guess is that a home brewer bought a keg, drank the beer, he pulled the valve out, used the keg to make his own beer, and then he put the same lock ring in. And we'll show you some of the evidence of that later on. All right, so here we go. So the valve design, if you look at the top picture, you can see that there's a channel on the inside of most of your necks. Now, this neck, it's called a draft neck. That's, I guess, the term for it globally. And it's mainly used in North America, and it's mainly used with the D-valve. But it's got that little channel with the red circle around it, and that's what those two ears slip into. So you slip it through a couple channels, and you twist it, and that will hold the keg in place, or that will hold the valve in place. But it's not enough to hold the valve in place when you pressurize it because you've got couplers going on and off, and they're getting twisted. So that's where the lock ring comes in. So there's another channel there. You put a lock ring in there. And that is, again, I said before, that's the primary safety feature. If there's something wrong with that lock ring, that keg is a hazard. Right? And you know what these kegs get pressurized to, and when a valve shoots out of it, someone's going to the hospital. I've never heard of a death with a stainless steel keg, you know, with a valve popping out of a stainless steel keg, but it's not something you want to test. All right. So, yes, you got the lock ring, you got the two lugs. In order for a valve to be ejected from the keg, three things have to happen at the same time. First of all, again, the lock ring has to be either compromised or it's no longer in place. And there are kegs out there, I can guarantee you, that don't have a lock ring on there. So it's just a ticking time bomb. All right, keg still under pressure with the O-ring and the CO2 valve still maintaining their seal. And then the two-ear valve has to align with that channel, right? So all those three things have to happen at the same time for a valve to shoot out of a keg. All right, now the pressure on the inside of the valve will keep the ears in that channel. But again, as you're taking couplers on and off, you can be taking a coupler off and you twist it the right, you know, just enough or get just enough downward pressure on it that the ears line up again and you don't have a lock ring in there or something and that keg is pressurized, that valve is coming out. So anytime you see anything like that, and we'll talk about this again later, but you see something like that, if you can safely depressurize the keg, you need to depressurize it and quarantine it. All right. So let's look at some proper and improper lock ring installation. So here you can see you've got the two ears there. Do I have a laser or something, I can point with? All right. So anyway, the top picture, you can see there's two ears there at the top and bottom, and then you can see on the red circle, that's where the lock ring ends. And you can see it on the bottom picture, too. That lock ring should be flat. All right, the lock ring here, this is a lock ring that's already been taken out, and the very act of removing the lock ring, it will damage the lock ring. So that's why it's no longer good for use. The lock ring is basically a piece of steel. It's a steel circle, and the metal will overlap in parts. And when you pull it out, first of all, it's not going to overlap properly. It's not going to lay flat. And you can get one or the other end of it that'll kind of flip up like that on that bottom picture. All right, so again, here's what a new lock ring looks. Everything's nice and smooth and flat. This is the lock ring that we pulled out of the keg. And you can see out of the keg that the valve shot out of. And you can see three things here, really. One, the two layers don't overlap. They're not perfectly overlapped. The one on the bottom is sticking out more. Second of all, you can see where it looks like someone took a flathead screwdriver to it or a pair of needle-nose pliers to try to pull the lock ring out in the first place. And the third thing you see at the top of the picture there is where the end of it's kind of sticking up a little bit. All right, so here's a neck. The neck on the top is normal. There's no visible damage to it. But if you look at the neck on the bottom, it's got, you know, it looks like someone took a flathead screwdriver or a pair of needle-nose pliers to it, and it's got a whole bunch of divots in it. All right, so this is a properly installed lock ring. You'll notice a couple things. First of all, the end of the lock ring is at a 45-degree angle from the two lug holes, the lug channels. All right, and you'll also notice that the lock ring is laying flat. There's no deformation. There's no signs of any tampering. Everything's as it should be. On this valve, on this one, you'll see that this lock ring's been used before. You see that gap right there, and that will prevent the valve from being put in there and properly sealing. You can also see here on this one again. I think this is the same lock ring. But you can see all the impact points on the lock ring and on the outer edge. And if you can see there kind of at the bottom, because the ears of the valve are bent, it prevents the lock ring from going off, fitting all the way into that lock ring channel. And so it's that much easier to get that lock ring to come out, you know, especially accidentally when you're taking a coupler on and off of it. Here's another one where you can see, you know, just putting a coupler on and off, you can make the lock ring start to come out of the channel there, and that will create a hazard as well. So I think we'll turn it over now for questions. Any questions out there? Do you want to use the mic?
You had mentioned that there'd be a couple of different suppliers for parts of these things. Frankie obviously is one of them. What was the other?
Yeah, no, we actually don't manufacture the valves. There's a company called DSI and a company called Micromatic that can supply valve parts. Thanks. For the most part, I think they're interchangeable, but you need to find out what you have to be sure.
Thank you.
So if you have damaged lock rings on some of your kegs, is it safe enough for you to order new lock rings and install them yourself, or is that something that you should get a professional to
You're going to be better off getting a professional to do it. There's, you know, we do it, that we have some competitors that can do it. For the cost to do it, it's, you know, it's $15 to $20 per keg to do this. It's not, you know, including freight, depending on how far away you are from them. It's not a huge fee, and to make sure that you've done it right and to limit any kind of legal liability, I think it's worth it. But, you know, you can send us pictures. You know, my contact information is here, so we can take a look at it and take it as a case by case.
Right on. Thanks, man.
Yep.
Just recently, I was picking up a keg from one of my accounts, and it was sitting on its side, and it was slightly leaking CO2. And I pulled the keg out. It was empty. I kind of just put my finger down on the ball, and everything inside fell into the keg.
Okay.
So I got it back, took the ring out. Sorry, I probably shouldn't have done that. Took the ring out. There was no pressure in the keg. Removed it, and the basket that is mounted right to the neck had separated. You could see where it was sitting there, and I don't know that it's welded or pressure fitted. It seems like to me that's something that should be welded into there. But that had come free, basically. So all the components had fallen into the keg. And I don't know who it was. I just learned of the DSI and Micromatic that it could be one of those. So when I get back, I'll check it out. But that seems to me, from what I've heard from those guys, that never, ever happens.
I would say we see it every once in a while. It's pretty rare. That, you know, when you get these things, you're kind of trying to be a detective. There's really no way to tell exactly what happened. I do know that, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is there's also an S-type valve there, and it's a well-type valve similar to the D-type, and they're in the market some, and they're mostly for European kegs, you know, mostly for import beers. But the downstroke on an S-type on an S coupler is about a quarter of an inch longer than a D coupler. So if you've got some bartender there and he's trying to put a coupler on, he just keeps on jamming it down and jamming his weight down, you know, that could maybe do it. That's the only thing we've really been able to come up with, as far as I know.
And the keg company is actually just sending me a whole new spear for that particular keg.
Yeah.
But is that something you can check for, or is that something you should look for in those, or is it just not common enough that that's worth?
I don't know if it's common enough. I mean, yeah. if you want to keep that valve and send it to us, maybe there'll be some more something we'll learn from it that we can, you know, we can pass on to everyone. But
thank you.
Yep.
How do you ensure cleanliness of just the spear and the neck and the inside of the keg as far as growth and beer stone goes if you can't actually take the spear out of the keg?
Right. I think most keg manufacturers and most chemical suppliers will be able to help you with that. Most racking line manufacturers. I think there are some approved cleaning regimens out there that have proven to work over time. And again, I would talk to a chemical supplier or one of the racking line suppliers. I know the racking line suppliers all have a different opinion. I mean, it's kind of their sales pitch. So, but I would check with them. That's going to vary.
Thank you very much for your time.
We've
had a problem with some of our washing some of our kegs. They're not evacuating correctly out of the CO2 inlet. You know, it's upside down and shoots chemicals up and comes out of the CO2 inlet. It's usually during the caustic cycle and those heavy solids. And is it just a matter of stuff is getting stuck in the outlet from the CO2, or is it the stem is malfunctioning?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't think that would be the keg
Valve.
I've
hooked it up to CO2 as well and tried to, you know, blow back through the other direction, and it doesn't make a difference, really.
Right.
And it's during the caustic. Yeah, I know it's because of the heavy solids, because it's usually during the caustic cycle that it does that.
Right. Yeah, I would check with the chemical supplier and talk to them, or, you know, whoever made your filling system.
I gotcha.
See what that does. But I don't think that would be a function of the valve or the keg.
Okay, just malfunctioning equipment, I guess, or something.
Right.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
So every once in a while, I'll have a random, like, phantom leak out of a keg where it will, while you're pouring, when you stop pouring, it'll bubble up out of the liquid from the top of, like, the Sankey coupler. Is that, and when you diagnose it, all the O-rings are there, and I can't find a leak anywhere else in the system. Is that most likely from a scratched ball?
Scratched ball or CO2 valve, yeah, something you can't see.
Yeah, something internally in it.
Yep.
Okay. That's what I figured. Thank you.
All right.
I know most kegs or all kegs are actually built with a little extra space in each keg to accompany a dent or falling off the truck or what. I'm just kind of curious of what that is, if there's a general number that is for a half barrel or
I don't know what that is. I know it varies by keg size. But I know on our drawings there's a nominal
headspace,
nominal volume, and then you've got, you know, the construction volume, which includes the headspace.
Okay.
So
can kegs withstand falls from being stacked too high? Is that something
they should avoid? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's rare to see a keg stacked more than three high. If you're stacking them three high, you've probably got a pallet between each layer, but they should withstand that. Without question.
And then, like, the foam that you might get in beer, since it's filled to the top, is there any foam from dropping the keg from too high?
I would think there would be a little bit. You know, it's kind of like shaking a can or a bottle. It's going to foam for a little bit, but I think it would settle down. It wouldn't be a permanent condition, I wouldn't think.
Should you ever replace the rubber wear-out type parts, valves, gaskets, if you don't have a problem, if you've got old kegs, or should you only do it when you see evidence that it's leaking and has broken down?
I think that's a philosophical decision by the brewery. I mean, to me, it makes sense to do it every 5 to 7 years, whether you see a problem or not. Because if you get to that point and you're using the same CO2 valves, you're about to have a problem. It depends on how you value or what cost you put on a keg of returned beer, not just in the cost of, you know, you just wasted that beer. You just upset a customer, you just upset a distributor, and you've got to go get that keg back, and you made nothing from it. You know, that's a valuation that every brewery is going to do themselves, and you'll make that decision based on that. I will say very few brewers in the U.S. do a preventative maintenance program.
And that would need to be done. That would need to be send the keg to you guys, right? We can't do that ourselves.
I would say if you're going to do that yourselves, you can get some training, and there's a lot of all the valve manufacturers will train you.
You said you worked on a report with the Flying Spear incident. Is that report available to the public?
I'm sorry?
The keg that malfunctioned and shot the spear into the guy's face?
Yeah.
You said you ran a report on that. Is that report available to the public?
They asked that we not make that available to the public. That's where this came from, or at least the second half of it. The first half of it came from the incidents a couple years ago with Red Hook and the plastic keg. So.
Mark, could you talk a minute about your recommended keg maintenance schedules that all brewers should be thinking about when they're talking about their keg fleets?
Yeah, again, I would say it's really driven by your cleaning cycles and, you know, what kind of chemicals you're using and things like that. But I think most of the valve manufacturers or all the valve manufacturers would recommend 5 to 7 years at the outside for, you know, how often to do it. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
What was that distance from the chime to the neck cup?
0.33 inches. I think it's like 8.5 millimeters. Is that right? That sound right? Yeah.
So is there a tool that you need to I have a tool to depress the spear down to remove a locking ring if I have to do it after it's been depressurized, but is there a tool to appropriately put the locking ring back in without deforming it? With training from a manufacturer, but so we can do it on our own.
Yeah, there is. There's a way to do it manually with the tool that will keep the valve depressed while you put the lock ring in there.
Well, tool to compress the lock ring. I've got a spear depressing tool for both types of kegs that we have in our cooperage, but I don't know how to put the ring in without deforming it.
Right.
Is there a tool that will it'll shrink down a little bit if you can compress it all around? But where would I get that from? Would that be from the keg manufacturer or
the valve suppliers? I would say can get you that. Okay. We can get you that as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, I was just curious if there was you had recommended maintenance courses. Does Micromatic have a course, or if you want to be doing the repair and maintenance yourself? Because for me as a brewer, it's I kind of want to get inside my kegs and look and see.
Right. No, it's a good idea to open them up and see what's in them every once in a while. Anyway.
Yeah.
To make sure that your cleaning regimen, your CIP cycles, are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, but is there Micromatic holds those courses, or
I'm sure if you called Micromatic or DSI, they'd be happy to set you up with something.
Okay.
We have things on our website available where you can see how this works, mounting a spear into a keg and so on. It's a 3D animated video, so you can learn a little bit from that. But I want to recommend really it's kind of like a communication that you need. And if you miss to decompress it and you take the tool,
thank you. Hey.
You had mentioned that you could open yourself up to legal issues if you tamper with your kegs and then something goes wrong with them.
Yeah.
But then you've also mentioned that there's training that you can get, or these valve manufacturers will give you training or maybe even supply you with tools to do the work. I like to check my kegs to see that they're being cleaned properly, just spot check from time to time. To your knowledge, if you got training, would it protect you from the legal?
I would think it would certainly help. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not gonna make any legal claims like that. I would think it would help, but I don't think there's any guarantees out there.
But if we sent our kegs to a professional to have that done, then you would be protected.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Anyone else?
We bought a lot of kegs that the stem is loose. Is that something you see often? We had to get a torque wrench to basically get them all to 55 PSI. But is that?
Stem shouldn't be loose at all. I would think it wouldn't hold pressure if it was loose.
Okay, but you don't see that?
Screw-in.
Yeah.
Is it a screw in?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should tighten it to 70 Newton meter.
Okay.
Some people have also in their filling line at the end they have a wrench which should torque it again.
That's we had to.
Recommend it because it squeezes all the time the seal, and then definitely will make more problems than a little bit glue.
Yep. Okay.
Thanks.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much. Big round for Mark Carpenter. Thank you.